We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan.
Bears, 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 Bears. Football, football, football.
You know what? I'd like to say you're wrong, Molly, but you're not wrong very often.
David Haw.
That was one of the best questions you've ever asked.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to get an answer just as good.
Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
I want to get to Kevin from Palatine first because he has something to say.
Your mortal
Good
enemy.
Morning, Kevin.
Oh, no, not mortal enemy. I love Hawk.
You're lying now, bro. Now you're lying.
I just love sparring with them.
No, I know. Right. No,
same
you're
here,
right.
Kevin. Give me a hug.
If you're waiting for a hug, you might want to pack a lunch.
And, Mark, I think this is probably going to make you super upset, but I think the next two guys the Cubs should sign, Justin Steele, who I still think you think is like some mop-up man because you don't read staff and you don't understand who he is.
How come he's not the number two or the number one? I don't get it. Like, you're acting like Justin Steele's on his way to, you know, a $50 million contract in season here.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay. I don't think he's a scrub. I'm just not going to overrate a guy who's done nothing.
Respect your opinions. We love the banter, and I don't necessarily disagree with his take on Justin Steele.
Kevin is now my mortal enemy. That's what I did. I wanted to take the heat off of you.
You did that.
Start your mornings with Mully and Hawk, 5:30 till 10 a.m.
This is incredible. A great day here. Special day
on 670 The Score.
From Harry Carey and all the baseball fans. That's incredible. Good job.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good Wednesday morning, Chicago. It is going to be a great day here in the city. There is a lot going on, and we are welcoming here, well, at least first time for the morning show. He has been on The Score before, and he has experience behind the microphone in sports talk radio. Marshall Harris from CBS2 in for Mully today. Good morning, Marshall.
Good Welcome. Morning. Good morning. I'm happy to be here. I'm wide awake. You might think just because I worked till 10:30 last night, I'd be sleepy, drowsy. Nah. Let's go.
Well, you're working till 10:30 and then making the quick turnaround. This is not the most ideal time to be on the morning show, but you are, as you said, running on adrenaline. It's a quick turnaround. How are you feeling?
I feel great, honestly. I have this giant iced tea, a little caffeine in it, that's going to carry me through the next, 4.5 hours? So we're good. Like, the whole thing is we have so much to talk about, and there's this situation where I'm, you know, limited to 2 minutes, 3 minutes at the most on television. Now, you going to let me breathe?
You're going to
let me opine away?
Yeah, this is like when you are doing the nightly sports cast, it's almost like when you're at the NFL Combine and you're doing a cone drill.
Yes.
And then you're doing some agility drills and you're back and forth. Boy, it's impressive. Boy, nice inflection. Boy, nice highlight. But this is more like, all right.
It's a marathon.
Well, I don't know if it's a marathon. I think that probably overstates our commitment level here in terms of fitness. But, you know, it's a good 10K.
Okay, a 10K is good. 6.2 miles, I'll take that.
There you go.
Happy to run with you.
You a jogger? Runner?
I was. I messed up my back recently. I got degenerative disc in my back, apparently. So I haven't been running lately. But before that, yeah, I run all the time. I'm the guy who runs to the gym, then works out, and then runs home. Like, I was probably doing too much.
Yeah, that's probably the way it kind of reveals itself. Bad backs are kind of a fact of life and getting older, though.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, I'm older than you, so I can definitely relate. All right, we've got a big day today because we are inching ever closer to opening day, which is tomorrow. But today, I think, is a big day at the station, a big day in town, because I know you've been here. Marshall arrived in the summer of 2021. Every year,
There's a toast to Harry Carey, and the score will be out there celebrating the Parkinson Spiegel Show, broadcast 2-6 today from Harry Carey's at Navy Pier, courtesy of Budweiser. And we're going to get Harry voted the mayor of Rush Street. So that is a big deal. We're going to talk to Ryan Sandberg later in the program about that, and also just about Ryan Sandberg, because who doesn't want to talk to Ryan Sandberg a day before opening day?
I think this would be a perfect time to talk to Rhino. I mean, he's always had thoughts. I'll say that. And I covered him back when he was the manager for the Philadelphia Phillies. And he's always introspective and will give you his honest opinion about whatever.
Well, that's going to be a great conversation.
I think so. Well, I'm not going to bring up the Phillies thing, but
no, I know. Hey, Rhino, how's it going? Remember that day in Philadelphia?
No, fired? We don't need
Rhino is the best. He's really good, and he is he's never been a guy that has sought the spotlight. Never been a guy that has wanted to be, you know, the loudest voice in the room or try to act like the smartest guy in the booth. But he definitely understands baseball. His insight is valuable, and I think he's gotten very good at expressing his opinion.
I just, whenever I talked to him, I was like, now explain to me one more time why Jerome Walton was the rookie of the year in 1989. I'm watching WGN. I was like, I feel like Dwight Smith had better numbers, but, you know, that's the kind of conversations Ryan Sandberg and
I love a Dwight Smith reference. Yeah, it's not even 5:45 yet. All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself, only because if people are you know, listening, if they're getting a sense of, okay, well, yeah, he sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, the guy from Channel 2. And you got here in the summer of 2021. You came via Sacramento, but you spent a lot of time in Philly, and you grew up in Alabama.
Yeah.
Along the way, you also stopped at Mississippi State.
It's a charming path. Yeah, I'm representing today. Got my Stark Vegas shirt on. So I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, the hockey capital of the South that I was telling you about earlier.
I love that nugget. I love that little bit of trivia.
It's also the home of Space Camp. And so the movie Space Camp was filmed there. So it's a big deal. I grew up there, went to Mississippi State to go to college, moved back to Huntsville for a couple of years, worked in television there, 2 years in Cincinnati, covering King Griffey Jr., having his hamstring fall off the bone. Pittsburgh, when the Steelers won the Super Bowl with Jerome Bettis, and then 11 years in Philadelphia. And that was a good run, 2008 World Series with, you know, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, Cole Hamels, those guys. And then the last 2.5 years before coming here in 2021, as you said, in Sacramento, where hopefully tonight is the night that those poor fans break the streak of the Kings having the...
This is the night that they can clinch, right?
They can clinch.
I was looking at that, and it's been a very, very long time.
17 seasons, man. You think
17 seasons without a playoff berth.
Without a playoff berth. And you think like, oh, that's a long time. But no, it's like the longest active of the four major sports. It's an NBA record they broke the record with the San Diego Clippers before the Clippers even got to Los Angeles. And then here in Chicago, I come here and it's like, I want good sports. And right now the sports aren't that great. But you know what? We're gonna all get through this together. I think that's been kind of my attitude over the last year and a half.
And in Sacramento, it's not like, okay, if the Kings don't get to the playoffs, we'll focus on whatever else is in town.
No, it's funny because like there's more Raiders fans in Sacramento than Niners fans. They lost their team to Vegas because you know it's a short little hour and a half to 2 hours depending on traffic drive down to the Bay, and yeah, the Kings are everything. But you've got young adults who have never seen their team in the playoffs. Like, can you imagine that? Like, and not to have any other sport to lean on? Like, that's what's sad about it.
It's not as bad or as long of a drought, but it's similar. I mean, if you're talking about experiencing and adapting and dealing with futility, you're talking to the right audience here in Chicago.
Okay, that's fair. Okay? That's fair.
There's a lot of rebuilding going on. I know you've noticed. There's a lot of bottoming out occurring. There's a lot of that kind of dealing with loss and struggles and figuring out new plans and rebuilds. And I think that in Sacramento, it would probably just feel more part of the daily life because of how important, relatively speaking, the Kings are to that sports market.
Yeah. And the thing when I was there that I had to like kind of relay to fans because they were upset, whatever. You got to understand, in a place like that, you don't really have the leverage to do anything about it. You almost lost your basketball team. Mm-hmm. So you're just happy someone bought it, kept it in Sacramento.
you can't complain that much, can you? Because hey, you're just lucky to have a team,
right?
But they're going to the playoffs this year.
So they're going to the playoffs. Two teams that also might be on their way are playing tonight at the United Center. So we'll segue into what's going on in Chicago. This is a big deal. Typically, I don't know if it is. It doesn't carry the same buzz now. But when LeBron James comes to the United Center, when the Lakers come to town, it always is a big deal. It always used to be a big deal, whether it was Kobe and Shaq or whoever the case may be. It was one of those games that you identified as, I want to either watch, I want to try to go, but it was a happening. And tonight, I think both teams falling on some harder times than expected. But still, LeBron's in town. The game means something. You've got two teams that feel like they are going to the playoffs. I don't know if either one is going to feel good about that, but here they are. Bulls, Lakers tonight. Pregame on the score, 6:45.
I'll say this. You said both teams feel like they're going to the playoffs. Nah, both teams are going to the postseason. I don't know about the playoffs. I'll say it like that. You might be a one-and-done or a two-and-done situation with both these squads.
But, Marshall, what if the Bulls are the seventh or the eighth? What if they are sneaking in and they don't have to win two times to go one? It's a very complicated format. But it is, as you say correctly, the postseason. But to really be a part of the playoffs, they've got to win a couple games, probably, and then they have to get into the bracket. And then once you're there,
get smoked.
Yeah.
Get smoked.
That's gonna be the tough reality that you face. But wouldn't you rather do that?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't you rather do that than be on the outside looking in?
Once the trade deadline passed and you realize they were not gonna sell and, you know, try to bottom out, they're like, we're gonna make our big acquisition, come home, Pat Bev. That's when you're like, all right, I guess I'm on board for the ride. Because you really have no choice.
What do you make of him?
I think he's perfect in what I call the real WWE, which is the NBA. Because listen, I always feel like, oh, what's your favorite sport? It's like, baseball is my favorite sport. Baseball was my first love. That's one, right? But the NBA is right there because there's no sport where the drama bleeds into like everything else like the NBA. It's beautiful, and Adam Silver and those guys and the players, they're the best at making you care about stuff that you wouldn't care about in other leagues. Like, you know the players, you know the backgrounds, you know the beefs. Like, we just had the story on 60 Minutes of Charles Barkley and Kevin Durant. He snaps back. Like, you don't get that in other sports. Like, the no fun league won't let you have fun.
Hold on a second, though, because I understand what you're saying. The NBA does a tremendous job of marketing their superstars in a way that other leagues envy. But I also think that what you're seeing in the offseason with the National Football League is coming close to approaching the NBA in terms of diva drama. Because here we are in the midst of the NFL owners meetings, and I get what you're saying, but you look at, all right, well, hey, what's up with Lamar Jackson? Well, he doesn't have an agent, and he's posting his trade requests on Instagram, and he's going to say, I'm going to divorce myself from the Baltimore Ravens. Okay, you turn away from him for a second. Let's look at Aaron Rodgers. No, let's not. Let's cover our ears and look away and plug our nose, because everything he says is like sounding like Charlie Brown's teacher. Stop talking already. So there is that drama. There are your divas, and it's very NBA like, isn't it?
It is NBA like. But what I'm saying is, like, it seems like every team, or like one out of every two teams, or I was watching like the Warriors game last night, and Draymond Green's getting into it with guys on the New Orleans Pelicans, and Zion sitting like behind his guys, iced out. That's not even the Zion I remember. But, like, it's so much more common in the NBA throughout the season and the offseason. And everybody's got their own shows and stuff. And, like, you're like, for every Kelce Brothers podcast, right, all the NBA guys have something like that.
Fair enough. That's true. It is definitely.
Like, you have personalities in both.
Yeah.
But the magnitude and multitude in the NBA just outweighs every other league. By far. I wish baseball was more like that, honestly.
You don't see that as much as in baseball anymore, right? You don't see that as much. It's more. So as a baseball guy, if you consider yourself a baseball guy, every year, what is your level of excitement when opening day is now, you know, 24 hours away? Tomorrow is a special day. It should be a national holiday. It is opening day. How have you handled that as a professional compared to how you dealt with it as a kid? And how much are you looking forward to it tomorrow?
I think my inner kid is still alive a lot because of the nostalgia of things like this. You know, I worked in Cincinnati for 2 years, where that's like, it is a holiday and they have a parade and it's a thing. And first first team playing every year in the National League back then. So, like, I understand the reverence of the game and the history of the game more than most people because most people don't care about baseball. I'm so excited for this, though, because I've seen these games go quicker. I've seen the stuff. I mean, you saw JT Realmuto, right?
Yeah, kicked that was out hilarious, of the game. And
like, I'm just ready for all the awkward moments. Plus, just like games are going to take like 2 hours and 20 minutes, like they were when I was a kid. Remember when games used to be like under 2.5 hours?
Yeah, it used to be
better. So I'm with that.
So for people that didn't see that, JT Realmuto was catching for the Phillies in a minor league or in a spring training game. And the umpire, after there was a questionable call, was going to throw the ball back, and JT Realmuto had his glove, his catcher's glove there. The ball was not there. And when when the umpire went to put the ball in his glove, he moved the glove, and he threw it to the ground. And it kind of looked silly. He kind of did look silly. And all of a sudden, he threw him out.
He threw him out of the game.
That was ridiculous.
And obviously, Realmuto doesn't have eyes in the back of his head, and his explanation was pretty clear. He's like, literally, there's a video. John Boy did a great job on this on Instagram. And it's like, he had just thrown the ball to the pitcher like the last time when he needed a new ball. So he's like, oh, he probably is going to do that since there's no ball in my mitt. And then he's never been thrown. He's played in like 2,000 games and never been thrown out of
the game. This is the guy who represented America. He represented your country.
You know what? It's a microcosm of America. Sometimes things just, they don't go well.
It doesn't go well. All right. Well, we'll stick to sports. The opening day tomorrow, when you look at the Cubs and the White Sox, and we'll continue to talk about this throughout the show, but as Mark Grody and I were discussing yesterday, expectations for both teams are similar in that they could win between 80 and 85 games. Some people have the Sox maybe higher than that if they stay healthy, but everything with the White Sox predicated on health, everything with the Cubs kind of predicated on hope. There are a lot of veterans in here that if they play up to the back of their baseball cards, it's going to be a fun season on the North side. But the White Sox, it's all about keeping guys in the lineup on a regular basis because if that happens, they're going to have a very good year.
Well, you look at what they were able to do when those guys did have good years and they went to the playoffs a couple of years in a row. So you're thinking, all right, we can get back to that. Obviously, Dylan Cease, we see what he's capable of and how he's grown into this ace. And then, you know, the other pitchers, Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, they've got guys who can play baseball. We know that. It's all going to come down to how good is the rest of the division, I think. But also, remember, we're changing how we play baseball now in terms of there's less division games. So just being in a weak division won't be enough. Yeah, I do and I don't. I'm torn a little bit. Like, I remember when NHL teams, I was like, wait, you got like Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh, right? And everybody doesn't get to see Sidney Crosby? That's dumb. Like, everybody's got to be able to see the best players.
It's a great example because Mike Trout, as an example, Shohei Ohtani, as another. These baseball cities, these baseball fans need to be exposed to these guys.
Exactly.
Because their profiles are not as big as they could be. You have people who are watching the World Baseball Classic and like, oh, I didn't know Ohtani was like that. I didn't know he was that affable. I didn't know he could do that. And so it's the more people are exposed to these kinds of stars, that the better for the game.
I think with the World Baseball Classic and specifically, you know, the man had like 2 million Instagram followers going into the World Baseball Classic. He gained more Instagram fans over the course of the World Baseball Classic than Mike Trout, the next player with the next most number of followers, has total. He doubled his Instagram followership. That tells you, oh, people just did not know.
Well, younger people didn't know. That's the thing.
And that's the problem because
exactly.
We're old and we're going to die. Exactly. And we love baseball, but somebody else has got to pick up that mantle.
He's Marshall Harris. Keep us in a good mood talking about dying here until 10 o'clock today. I know what you're saying.
I'm alive and I'm awake and let's go.
Let's go. Who did you grow up rooting for in Alabama as a baseball fan?
This question always gets me in trouble. Okay, so
there's nothing that's going to get you in trouble today unless you say something we need to dump.
Brandon. I know the FCC. I know Carlin's rules. I know what words I cannot say. You don't have to worry about me in that respect.
Who?
So I grew up. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama. Lived there for 10 years till I moved to Huntsville. Grew up a White Sox fan. My dad used to take me to Birmingham Barons games. That's why I was a White Sox fan.
Really?
Yes. And then also, I was in Huntsville when I started really watching football, like in elementary school, and a guy named House Ballard gets drafted by the Bills. He played at Alabama A&M University, which is in Huntsville. So me and a bunch of people from our church started rooting for him to do well as an NFL player, so I became a Bills fan. And watched four straight Super Bowls of just misery. Okay,
so that's a great reason why to root for a team, though.
Yeah, so like, because like, yeah, this is like Huntsville's like an hour and a half south of Nashville. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, the Titans were still the Houston Oilers. Like, this is way back in the, right. I'm dating myself a little bit here. As far as basketball goes, I love scoring. I love doubleheaders on NBC. I love the music that Fox pirated for their college basketball. And Don Nelson said something once that just stuck with me. First one to 100 wins. And because of that, I fell in love with Run TMC. Best 2 years of my childhood in terms of watching basketball. I loved Michael Jordan, like the player.
So you liked the Warriors before they got
Run
Steph
TMC.
Curry.
And we went through quite the drought ourselves.
Yeah.
Quite the drought. We were like, all we need is a center.
So when you were in Sacramento and you had to acknowledge that publicly that you grew up a Warriors fan, maybe you didn't, but how did that go over?
It went over very well. You know why? Because a lot of those people were Warriors fans too. You know why? Because they had been watching Sacramento Kings basketball exactly. And not been paying attention to it.
You mentioned the White Sox growing up in Birmingham or being familiar with the Birmingham Barons, correct? The
right.
White Sox affiliate. Is there any young White Sox prospect that you fell in love with or remember growing up in the minors and developing into a Sox player?
Well, I loved Frank Thomas just because he went to Auburn and played football.
Alabama guy.
And like Bo Jackson, yeah. When he became a member of the White Sox, I'm a contrarian. You'll find this hard to believe. But like in Alabama, the most important question you're ever asked as a youth is Auburn or Alabama.
Yeah.
And I would be like, And they'd be like, no, you have to pick one. I was like, why? Because that's the way it goes. And I never picked one. I just loved like individual players like Deuce Palmer for Alabama. I loved Bo Jackson for Auburn. Frank Thomas, obviously, because I even liked college baseball back then. I was a weird kid. I liked stuff that most kids weren't paying attention to.
Well, I'm looking forward to then getting your take on Bryce Young versus C.J. Stroud. And we'll talk about that at some point during the show. We'll talk about what Matt Eberflus had to say on Tuesday at the NFL owners meetings in Arizona, talking about some of his roster decisions, some of his personnel moves that might be happening. We're going to spend some time during the pick six. I want to get your take on it now, though, as we lead into that. Yesterday was a big day because we heard from Jonathan Toews. 2 months after his last game, he was back on the ice practicing. Jonathan Toews is one of the greatest captains in Chicago sports history, and it looks like he may have one last shift, as they say. The Hawks do that for former players. This might be Jonathan Toews' last game. They have 9 games left. Hawks are not what they used to be. There are a lot of reasons why. But to hear Jonathan Toews kind of reflect on his career yesterday, it was nice to see him back and yet sad to see him speak of what he's going through now.
I think when I heard what he had to say, you know, talking, I think he talked for about 15 minutes. It struck me as he sounded like a guy in the NFL who knew his body was breaking down and
right.
Like, what can you do? And it was sad. It was sad because you could hear like the emotion of it all kind of overriding all the language that he was using, the way he was just trying to walk people through what he's been going through. And it's been a tough ride for him. I guess, you know, since he missed all that time. And I get the sense that he's more concerned with just like, and this is why I said the NFL thing, he's more concerned with like his day-to-day after hockey, it sounded like, more so than trying to get back on the ice right now. He would love to get back on the ice, obviously, but it sounds like he's dealing more with like real health problems that are not hockey-related and the longevity of his life and like how he's going to live the rest of his life.
He's Marshall Harris. He's from CBS2, and we're going to talk hockey for the next 4 hours. Just kidding. He's in for Mully today, and when we come back, the pick six. We'll go through all the top stories of the day. We'll let you know what we think of them. It's Marshall Harris in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy.
Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Matt Eberflus met with reporters Tuesday at the NFL owners' meetings and shared two interesting personnel items. One, the Bears believe Braxton Jones can play either left or right tackle. And two, new free agent Tremaine Edmonds will play middle linebacker in Eberflus's 4-3 scheme. Which declaration is the most significant or surprising?
Good questions. Good stuff. Nice to hear from Matt Eberflus. And just so people listening, that's Alex Kuhn asking the questions. Marshall Harris is in for Mully today. Brandon Fryer will be chiming in. He is in his usual role of keeping us on the rails, as they say. So, good to hear from Flusie. Here's the thing about the Tremaine Edmonds stuff. I didn't expect him to play middle linebacker. I thought he was going to be the weak side linebacker. I thought that was the position in this scheme, the Shaq Leonard spot, where Roquan Smith played, where the big money is to be made. Tremaine Edmonds comes from the Bills, and all of a sudden he is the middle linebacker in the scheme. It's probably just semantics. It might be just a minor thing, but they are kind of changing the rules, and that's okay, because if he's a star, he's an exceptional pass defender as a middle linebacker, and he is athletic, and wherever he is most comfortable, I think that's where you want him. So if that's what he wants, I think that's what the Bears need. TJ Edwards can play the weak side, and we'll see how that goes. What you need to me, I think, still, you need people in front of them so they can do their jobs. So Tremaine Edmonds at the middle linebacker spot is okay with me because of his athleticism. Braxton Jones being able to play both sides is important because who they draft at the number nine spot could be this is going to be a bigger story if they take, say, Paris Johnson and want to put him at the left tackle spot. And Braxton Jones's flexibility is important then to move to the right side, and we'll remember the day that Matt Eberflus said this about Braxton Jones.
David, I'm with you all the way. I think the most surprising one is about the premium position, and that's the offensive tackle. The fact that he said that Braxton Jones could either play left or right, to me shows that, okay, I'm thinking they're targeting offensive tackle in with that first round pick to me. And they're pretty much saying if we pick an offensive lineman or offensive tackle that is better than Braxton Jones on the left side, then we have no problem moving him over to the right. Now, the linebacker situation, I mean, yeah, that's cool. I'm with you, too. I thought Edmonds was better at the weak side. But to me, that's not a premium position, even though the Bears see it as that. I just think overall that tackle position is important because you want to protect Justin Fields.
I don't want to say that neither of these is important. They're both important because I saw the Bears play last year, and I saw them lose 14 games, right, which is a franchise record. I'll say this. Surprised about Tremaine Edmonds? Yeah, sure, okay. But if you believe TJ Edwards can do the job at the weak side, okay, that's fine. I think you could sort that out, and you can maybe make adjustments along the way. I was way more intrigued when he said left or right tackle. I was like, oh, you're already looking at somebody else to play left tackle. If you say that out loud, you're getting everyone ready for the idea, including Braxton Jones, that he can play right tackle, and somebody else might come in and play left tackle. So I think that's where my intrigue was. I just want to know who they're targeting at number nine and whether or not they have someone very specific in mind or they're just seeing how everything plays out, because that's a lot of picks you got to wait to see what happens. So I'm going to say I'm much more intrigued about the tackle comment with Braxton Jones and the fact that he might be moved from left tackle to right tackle. He can play either. I was surprised by how well he played given where he was drafted last year. And he had a good rookie season, so let's see if we can add on to that and maybe focus on some of the positives. Because if we focus on the negatives with the Bears, it's going to be a long shift.
Interesting question.
When asked Tuesday on The Score about negotiating a contract extension in season, Cubs outfielder Ian Happ responded by saying this.
I just try not to put any hard deadlines or parameters on it. You know,
okay.
I'm here to play baseball and help this team win every day.
How do you interpret that? Do you think the Cubs and Happ will agree to an extension by the end of this season?
I think that was Ian Happ's way of saying, hey, calendar's open. What do you guys want to meet for coffee? I know coffee. Let's meet for coffee. Have some of my coffee. Ian Happ is a consummate professional. He's somebody that took a major step last year. I think in his mind, I interpreted that as, let's make a deal. And he has a lot of reasons for wanting to stay in Chicago. He has a lot of reasons for wanting to remain a Cub. And the Cubs, you know, they benefit from drafting, developing, and seeing him flourish into an all-star outfielder. The only problem is we continue to say, and it's not a problem, it's a nice luxury. They have prospects in the system that don't create a sense of urgency around his contract status. If they do it this season, okay, fine. If they don't, okay, fine. Because they have people ready to come up with the wings. I don't know, by the way, did you see Pete Crow Armstrong make another great catch? Because he's doing something every day at the minor leagues that make you say, wow. So I don't know that there's that urgency that existed with maybe even, or you could justify the Nico Horner deal. Ian Happ is a very good Cub, but I don't know that he's indispensable. I hope they find common ground. I would like to see him stick around, but I don't know that I'm willing to say that they're going to get a deal done, because I think if there's a disparity in price, the Cubs want him at their price, and I think without knowing what they're talking about in terms of overall value, if that's the case, these things typically end up dragging out.
I don't see it happening. I think he could be obviously a trade target too by the trade deadline. And the reason why, just off what you said, David, too, they have so much depth of prospects in the outfield position. So, like you said, PCA looks like natural position to just fill in right where Ian Happ left off. Like, I think they're talking. I don't think nothing's really going on with it. I think they did have conversations. I just don't see it's happening right now for Ian Happ, and this could be his last season with the Cubs.
I think the Cubs are looking at this very simply. I agree with Brandon. He's a guy that his potential has never been higher in terms of, not potential, but his value has never been higher in the eyes of other teams. He's coming off an all-star appearance. He's coming off the Gold Glove. You start adding that up and saying, okay, he's 28 years old. And you start looking back and see, what else we got coming up? It would hurt right the second if he wasn't on our team. But in a couple of years, we might have a couple of guys that can fill the spot. Plus, free agency exists in another way. I'll say this, $10.8 million is what he's making this year, right? Ian Happ wants to get paid. That's what I heard when he yes. gave you that soundbite. Yes. He wants to get paid. Yes. So he's being real coy about getting that money.
So, okay, I want to play this out, though. Brandon, I don't disagree with anything you said, but say the Cubs are two games out of the last wild card spot, and it's July 20th, and they're entertaining trade possibilities for Ian Happ and trade talks. Are you going to get rid of your all-star left fielder if you're in contention for a playoff spot?
No. Not that. I'm not going so that far. I'm saying if they're out of it,
right.
If things have gone horribly wrong, if it's like last season,
then they're sellers.
You got to be sellers because you got to do what's best long-term for the organization. But Ian Happ wants to get paid. That's what I know.
So the better you are, the more you run the risk of losing him for basically
for nothing. Yes, absolutely.
You're crazy? What are you asking? A stupid question like that?
Hawk Harrelson appeared on AJ Pierzynski's new Foul Territory podcast and revealed that he felt like he was pushed out of the broadcast booth before he was ready.
I'll tell him I didn't retire. I got retired.
You know? Happens to all of us at some point.
Exactly. Well, I got fired is what it boils down to.
It happens to all of us.
You know.
How surprising was this from Hawk? Do you buy it?
I was very surprised. I was very surprised because I consider Hawk a friend, a guy who is an institution and certainly has a legacy as a broadcaster in Chicago, as somebody who meant a lot to the city and still does. I felt my interpretation in when I heard that, I just really did feel sad. I felt sad for a guy who has spent so many years loving the White Sox and representing the organization and being so happy and proud of what he did, having that kind of feeling and bitter taste about how he left. I don't know the circumstances, and I don't know that it really does anybody any good to revisit them now. I think it's unfortunate that he has this kind of feeling, this bad aftertaste, because he had a heck of a career, a Hall of Fame-worthy career. He is the guy is often imitated, never duplicated. He's the Hawk. He is Hawk Harrelson. And so hearing him talk about guys in that organization, guys like Brooks Boyer, who I have a ton of respect for and is a great guy, I don't know that I really enjoyed that conversation. And frankly, I was a little surprised that A.J. Pierzynski on his podcast promoted that to the point where it's very divisive. And so I understand it because a lot of people wanted to listen to it, and you give Hawk his say. And if he wants to amplify that, he's always got to, you know, the door is always open. But I was just overall, to describe my feeling in hearing this, pretty sad.
I was surprised by it. That I was more surprised really by AJ's response when he said, happens to all of us. Like, it more took like a shot to me at the Sox organization from AJ.
He accepted that.
Right. When Hawk said that. I'm not surprised what Hawk said, because to me, Hawk, that's who he is. To me, he's unfiltered. I have no problem saying he was on the show with us. He says whatever he wants to say. So I'm used to that. I just think, and I do kind of buy it a little bit. I just think they probably was like, we're going to phase him out a little bit here, and we're going to see who else works with Stoney and, you know, Benetti, who's also, you know, a friend of the show here and a friend of the station, that they like that pairing too over there. So I'm not shocked at all, but I do buy it.
Yeah, I buy what he's saying, because when he said it, you could feel him when he's saying it. It wasn't like one of those, didn't sound like a canned phrase that he was waiting to pull out or anything. It was just like in the moment he kind of gave it to you. Now, I looked at this a couple ways. I'm a guy who grew up watching Hawk, right, on WGN, like growing up watching a lot of Chicago baseball, both Cubs and White Sox. I'll say this, he's 81 years old. So, like, you know your time is coming when you get to 70s and on. Like, that's just the reality of the game. The game is the game.
Right.
So I wasn't surprised that he said it. And then, like, he's got a book coming out, right? So, like, you're going to say stuff promoting your book, just, like, you kind of let it all hang out, say, hey, I'm giving you a taste of, like, the realness that I'm going to give you in this book. And then A.J. Pierzynski wasn't surprised by anything he said, because, as you guys said, the man is unfiltered. He wasn't going to put a filter on in his own podcast. So none of this surprised me at all. As far as if I buy it, I buy that that's what he believes. I think,
and that's all that matters.
And that, yeah,
I think probably that's all that
matters. Yeah, like if your organization made you feel that way on the way out the door, then that's it is what it is. And it's sad. You're right. It's sad. At the end of the day, it's just sad.
It's still a difficult question to answer.
Blackhawks captain Jonathan Toews practiced Tuesday 2 months after his last game. He was reflective about retirement in a 14-minute session with reporters.
I got to the point where my health is more important, and I'm at that point where it feels like more damage is being done than is a good thing. And so, yeah, I'm committed to getting back to a place where, like I said, I'm enjoying the game. I've got energy to not only go out there and play the game at the level I know that I can, but also have the energy left over to enjoy the life.
If this is it for Toews, who might skate one more game, what will you remember most about his career?
Well, I maintain that when Jonathan Toews was at the top of his game, there was not a better leader in the NHL. And I don't know that there have been many captains who have had any more impact or success in Chicago sports than he did. And he was a captain at a very young age, and he always was the most responsible guy in the room, the most professional player. And he could play it at a very high level. And the debate back early on in their respective careers was, who would you rather have, Kane or Toews? Who means more to this franchise? And I'll maintain this. As far as what I'll remember, from 2010 to 2015, I've said this before, I've been 20 years in this market, and those were the most fun 5 years covering that Blackhawks run. Three cups in 5 years, and having been around that group and seeing them grow up in front of you, Jonathan Toews was always accessible, reliable, and dependable. And this is a guy that not only on the ice but off of it, he was the same guy. And I respected the heck out of him as much as any athlete in Chicago I've ever covered. I will miss Jonathan Toews. I know he hasn't played at a high level lately. I know that there's a lot of things about what happened on his watch and to the Blackhawks organization that are messy, complicated, and unfortunate. But I will remember Jonathan Toews if this is indeed his last days, or he has one more game as a Blackhawk, as the consummate pro and one of the greatest captains we've ever seen.
I'm with you, David. I see him one of the greatest Blackhawks captains ever. I see him steady, always showing up in big moments. I think him and Kane are probably one of the best duos in NHL history to me. And you can argue, say, in Chicago history, too. I'm, you know, MJ and Scotty, number one of two.
Michael and Scotty.
But you
Kane
can argue,
and Taze.
Yeah, you can argue right there that they're right there with them. So I see that with Taves overall. It's just sad to overall see him in this state right now, like retirement possibly for Taves is crazy. I just hope that he can, you know, that his health is okay so he can get out there and at least, you know, go in front of the fans one more time, especially for a home game.
I think the thing that strikes me as a guy who watched from afar, you know, I was at the Wells Fargo Center when they go to overtime and win game six and the horn lights are, what happened? Oh, it's over. It's over. Because the Flyers were on like a crazy run.
You were there
year.
On that night in 2010?
Yeah. The NBC Sports Philadelphia offices are inside the Wells Fargo Center.
Right.
So we all go out to the concourse whenever there's something's going on that's big. So it's just one of the benefits of working there. And so for me, it's like this. The man's nickname is Captain Serious, right? Captain. Like, that's what you're going to remember is they won the three cups, and this dude was at the head of the table for it all. And not just the fact that he was the captain, but, like, before he turned 21 years old, they named him the captain.
Right.
That tells you what you're dealing with.
How many 20-year-olds do you know that could handle that responsibility?
And you know, I know he struggled, like, at the very initial part of that with, like, I got to be perfect, but he grew into it, and he rolled with it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing that's going to strike me when it's all said and done. His legacy is like, yo, not only did you win the three cups, but you were that dude. You were that guy.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
What happens tonight at the United Center when LeBron James and the Lakers, as well as Anthony Davis returning home, take on the Bulls? Did Patrick Beverley ignite the Lakers Sunday enough for that edge to carry over tonight? Which team needs a win more?
I don't know if it matters to the Lakers. I don't know if it matters if they were ignited or not. I don't know how healthy they are. I don't know how good they are. I think LeBron's even doubtful or questionable or whatever the case may be, depending on how he wakes up this morning. The Lakers look old. That's all they do. I mean, LeBron is LeBron. And every time that they come to town, it is an event. And it is something, it's a different feel at the United Center. Anthony Davis coming back, will he be dressed? Will he be active? I don't know. Will he be, you know, in street clothes? His availability is so uncertain that you can't necessarily circle it on your calendar because he's a definite maybe. He's done a lot of great things in the NBA, and it all started here in Chicago. So it's got to be a special night for him, and it's a special night when the Lakers come to town. I think the Lakers probably need it more. They are more desperate than the Bulls, but these are two, let's face it, teams that feel like the season has not gone the way either franchise expected it to go. The Bulls are still playing to get a spot in the postseason. I won't say playoffs out of respect for Marshall, but they still have a shot at the postseason. And so I think tonight they take care of business at home against the health-impaired Lakers, whose season is not gone the way they wanted. I think Bulls win.
Wow.
It all depends on who plays for the Lakers to me. Like you said, LeBron James is questionable for this game. However, I did see him. He was in Houston. He was at the McDonald's All-American game watching his son Bronny play. So he looked fine. I saw him celebrating and stuff. So it really depends on, like, if he gets up and if he feels okay. So if he plays, that's good. And then D'Angelo Russell is also probable for this game, too. So if he comes and plays, too, I mean, I think he's the key to the Lakers' success. Anthony Davis, maybe he'll get a little spark being at home. I think the Lakers need this more. The Western Conference is really tight right now. I think they're like a game and a half where they could be out of the playoffs right now. The Mavericks are right on them. And right now the Bulls are 2.5 games up on the Wizards right now, and they're 2.5 games back of still getting the eighth seed. So I'm going to go that the Lakers need this win more overall.
You're right. The Lakers are 37-38, and they have a half game lead in their ninth place over the Thunder and the Mavs.
I was just about to bring up the facts here. When you say who needs it more, this is clear cut. The Lakers need this more. They lose the game, they're out of the play-in.
Yeah.
That they need it more. Let's just right. And what you said about the 2.5 games separating the Bulls and the 11th place team, understand the Wizards behind them. They split the series 2-2. That means you go to conference record. The Bulls have like a 3.5 game lead. So basically, if the Bulls win two of their last seven games, follow me on this. If the Bulls win two of their last seven games, The Wizards would have to win 5 of 6 to jump them. Now, I want you to really digest
that.
That's
not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These are all bad teams. I was explaining, like, I don't know, man. Can the Bulls really finish in the top 10? It's like, nah, y'all looking at this all wrong. It's not about the Bulls finishing in the top 10. It's about the Bulls not finishing in the bottom 5. And when you look at it like that and understand how bad the teams are at the bottom of the East, you're like, okay. As far as LeBron James, have y'all forgotten this man's memory is like an elephant? He is petty, okay? So, first of all, yes, he's playing. He was probably inspired by Bronny's tone last night. Like,
those are some.
Bronny hit 5 threes.
Yeah.
And so he was celebrating. He was good. Listen. LeBron James is coming out like a madman possessed. Anthony Davis is playing. D'Angelo Russell is playing. Bulls are in for a long night.
Ooh.
Bulls are in for a long night.
Too small.
Pick 6, Delmore.
In the Final Four that nobody might watch, how would you rank the head coaches among UConn, Miami, FAU, and San Diego State? How many casual sports fans could even name all 4 coaches? And is any of the 4 good? Is any of the 4 good enough to give his team a slight edge?
I know we probably shouldn't talk about the Final Four that nobody might watch, especially the company of a CBS employee.
I'll watch.
But okay, I'll watch too. But I just don't want to, you know, get off on the wrong foot. I don't want Krista like texting me and saying, "How dare you?" So I will watch. I'm interested. These coaches are guys who are relatively anonymous compared to this. Isn't Izzo, Coach K, Jim Boeheim, and you know, pick a 4th icon, because these are guys that the junkies, the college basketball junkies, understand and appreciate. Dusty May versus Jim Dutcher. Think about that. One of those 2 guys is going to be coaching in the national championship game on Monday night. Either Dusty May, former Indiana University team manager, or Jim Dutcher, former Illini graduate assistant. One of those guys is going to be in the finals. They're going to face either Jim Larrañaga from Miami, who I think is the best coach left, and the guy who can most impact the game, if that's the question, and Danny Hurley. Danny Hurley, to me, is like John Harbaugh in the NFL. He is the brother who has been his entire life overlooked by the other brother who was a better player. But this guy's clearly the better coach. And Danny Hurley now has a chance to win a national championship. I think they end up doing that. And the only reason they won't, in my mind, will be because if Jim Larrañaga finds a way to outcoach Danny Hurley in the semifinal game. I'm looking forward to this Final Four only because it is the Final Four. And you always can get excited about that.
This question is kind of disrespectful because I'm going to watch this game. Okay. Like, so I think this is a little disrespectful, but to overall rank the coaching right now, I got UConn, Miami, San Diego State, and FAU. Now, however, you know, I've been on that train, that FAU train, choo choo, jump on. All right. It's like Marshall, jump on the train because I got them winning it right now. So
wait, winning it all?
I got them going to the championship now and winning it all. Okay. Yeah. Jonnell Davis. We going with him. Gary, Indiana.
Go. Stand up.
We going to stand up right now. FAU all way, all day. Choo choo. Jump on the train.
Wow. Okay. So I like that you find that part of the question disrespectful. I found the whole coaching thing disrespectful. One guy's been coaching for 37 years and has now taken 2 different teams, one of them being George Mason, to the Final Four. Now, granted, he's had a couple of down years, and by down I mean 3 down years, the last 3 years where they didn't get to the tournament. But Jim Larrañaga is that dude.
Yeah.
And he's, people thought when he went to Miami, oh, it's just kind of like a sunset for him. But as you can see, clearly he's still out here coaching and coaching to win. I think Jim Larrañaga is the best coach. I think Hurley is second based on the accolades he's picked up and now being in a Final Four and maybe having a chip on his shoulder because, you know, of his brother. As far as people are going to watch it, I am a CBS employee, as was pointed out. I will be watching the Final Four, but I'd be watching it anyway. I just happen to be working both Saturday and Monday. I'm working for Matt Zahn on Saturday, so I'll be there. The news will come on at like 11:30, and I'll just be enjoying the ride.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't want to suggest you shouldn't watch or nobody will watch. I just wonder if anybody actually will, you know.
Watch.
Yeah, watch. And by the way, I kind of made my own point accidentally. I said Jim Dutcher. Jim Dutcher is the dad who used to coach at Minnesota. It's Brian Dutcher. So wow. Brian Dutcher from San Diego State could be coaching in the national championship game opposite either Jim Larrañaga or Danny Hurley, the other Hurley.
I didn't realize till this tournament that Steve Fisher had been gone as long as he had been gone from San Diego State. And that just to accentuate your point. So it's anonymity no more for these four guys.
And Dutcher's been there a long time, and he goes back way to the Fab Five days of recruiting for Michigan. So it would be nice that you talk about sentimental stories and the narratives. Jim Larrañaga would be great. But Brian Dutcher getting to the championship game with that team, given what they've done, that would be a great story too.
I just want to say this one thing, that when it comes to NCAA tournament, I haven't filled out brackets in over a decade because I love chaos and hate to be a prisoner to my own bracket. I like to see the chaos. Every year I root for my team. First four, you caught us. We lost, had a wide open Jay to win it, didn't win it. And ever since then, I've been like, yeah, give me all the upsets. And you know what? This tournament has cashed in on upsets.
And thank you to my favorite Mullion Haw texter for pointing out my error in the Dutcher family. So Brian Dutcher is the coach of San Diego State. Jim was his father who coached at Minnesota. And it is time for us to take a break because we've got the extra point next. We're going to talk Cubs. We're going to talk White Sox. Marshall Harris in for Mully. It's Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
With opening day a little more than 24 hours away, if you were to look at both Chicago teams objectively, do the Cubs have an advantage at any one position? What about the rotation or bullpen? Manager, is there any position or area that the Cubs have an edge over the White Sox?
Boy, that's something else. That's a loaded question. Who wrote these questions? That's a loaded question, trying to trigger Cub fans. I don't know that they do. I should say, let me rephrase it. I think that there aren't as many as I thought. I think Nico Horner at second base would be the only position player I'd look at that I would rather have than what the White Sox have. And that's really due respect to Elvis Andrews, who was, you know, the second half the smartest player on the South Side for the last 2 months of the season. I think you look at Nico at second, maybe. Not catcher, not first base. Not shortstop, even though I like Dansby Swanson. It's a heck of an argument. That's a great debate. Who would you rather have, Dansby Swanson or Tim Anderson? I think the way that it looks like Tim Anderson is going to have a big year, give me TA, but talk to me in a month because I might change my mind. Third base, no doubt you'd rather have Moncada, even injured, impaired, and going to be, you know, iffy for opening day. The outfield? Boy, who in the outfield would you replace? I mean, Suzuki versus Oscar Colas, maybe that's a good debate, but it's not clear-cut. Nico Horner is the only position player I look at on the Cubs and say, I'd rather have him than anybody the White Sox have. Pitching rotations, we can debate that. I think the Sox have a slight edge. The bullpens both have guys who are going to evolve and develop into roles, but neither team has a closer. So to me, it's one position only, and that's Nico Horner.
Okay. Thank you a little bit disrespectful to Ian Happ. Just a little bit. Because the only reason I'm saying that, because just this past season, Ian Happ is an all-star. I don't think Larice Roberts is an all-star. So I'm just saying right at this point, not yet. That's the only reason why I say Ian Happ. I'm with you on Nico Horner.
If I polled 25 baseball executives and said, would you have Luis Robert or Ian Happ, 25 of them would say Luis Robert.
They would probably say that now because of potential, but we're talking about what's proven right now.
I'm taking note here, Brandon. That's twice in a half an hour you've called me disrespectful.
I'm sorry, David. I'm sorry. I mean, Dust is not here, so I'm trying to like
bad blood
add that in
bad
there.
Bad blood.
But at the same time, when it comes to the managers, I'm going to give David Ross the credit over there over Grifols.
That's a good.
Just because he's more proven.
I didn't mention Rossi. I agree with you. I think it's very respectful of you to point that out.
I got Ross. That was the only spots. Really, Nico Horner, and I would give Ian Happ the edge right there. Manager, they have that edge too. Everything else I'm going to give to the White Sox.
I was going to say, actually, Ian Happ over Andrew Benintendi. That's how I was looking at it. And I know what Andrew Benintendi's done, but I look at what he's done lately compared to what Ian Happ's done lately and what have you done for me lately. And Ian Happ's done a lot more lately. So I was really surprised that you didn't see that, well, David, in the way you were breaking it down.
I'm a little surprised, too, because I do like Ian Happ, but I don't think I love him. You know, I think that...
Well, do you love Andrew Benintendi?
I think I like him, but I don't know that I love him either. I think they're very similar, but I don't know that I would give either one a clear-cut edge. And I think that I was looking at it as like, would I rather have Benintendi over Hap? Probably. If I had to choose one for this season, maybe not. I know that's going to anger Cub fans. And you could make the argument for Ian Hap easily, especially coming out of last year. I want to see it again from him.
All I need to hear you say was you can make the argument easily for Ian Happ. So I'll just say easily Ian Happ over Andrew Benintendi. I'm with you guys on Nico Horner. Looking at the bullpen, since we don't know what's going on with Liam Hendricks, I kind of give the edge to guys who have experience closing. And so I think the Cubs might have the edge there as well at the back end of the bullpen right now. But I'm not even as definitive.
Boxberger, Fulmer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like those two guys have closed. And it's been a while since Boxberger's done it like at a high clip, but
I think the revelation in the Sox bullpen could be Ronaldo Lopez in high leverage situations.
And that's we're kind of over the closer talk unless you have like a Liam Hendricks type. It's more of like, yo, what am I going to do about this high leverage situation in the 7th, the 8th, the 9th? And since, you know, the games are going to go so fast, you don't have as much time to think about it. So that's how I'm looking at that. But yeah, also the edge definitely managerial because I haven't seen Pedro Grifol manage. I'm going to go with David Ross.
I would go with Rossi. I think that's a good call. And also 773 Texter, the Cubs have better health. Yes.
Better health and better just defensive fundamentals.
That's true too. So far, although you haven't seen Pedro's guys, you haven't seen the impact of the Grifol effect.
I saw some questionable decisions both on the base paths and in the field during the Cactus League. Now I know it's just Cactus League, but I'm just as a natural Sox fan, I'm always going to have a more critical eye towards my squad. Is that fair?
Yeah, I can understand that. And I'm not trying to disrespect or disparage anybody by just picking one Cubs player. But I think one's Cubs player and the manager, that makes a lot of sense to me. The left field debate with Benintendi versus Hap, that's a good one. And we can, you know, continue to have that. We're going to talk opening day. We'll get back to the Cubs versus Sox stuff. We're going to be talking baseball all day. We're going to talk to Ryne Sandberg at 9:40 because Rhino is promoting the toast to Harry Caray. Live from Harry Caray today, also at Navy Pier, the Score with Parkins and Spiegel will broadcast from 2 to 6 from that location, courtesy of Budweiser. Help vote Harry for mayor of Rush Street. When we come back, Marshall Harris is in for Mully. We're going to talk to Joe Ostrowski, find out some of the odds and some of the things going on this season. What about Cubs and Sox win totals? We'll talk to him next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score.
Oh, man, that's just so disrespectful.
Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. Marshall Harris from CBS2 in for Mully today. It's time to go out to our guy, Joe Ostrowski, the host of BetQL Daily, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline in Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. David Marshall. It's a great time of the year. So much going on with opening day coming up tomorrow, Final Four this weekend. Before you know it, the Masters is going to be here. Fantastic time on the sports calendar.
Let's start with baseball, Joe, because opening day is 24 hours away. Both sides of town get started. We're talking Cubs. We're talking White Sox. Talking win totals, what do you think?
Yeah, I think a year ago, if I would have told you, hey, going into 2023, the gap between the Sox and Cubs would only be 5 games, you would have thought I was crazy. But that's where we are right now. The Cubs win total, 77.5 wins, and I'm buying into what they're doing. I like the over for this team. And obviously, St. Louis, the heavy favorite to win the division. They had a couple of NL MVP candidates last year, one of them winning it. You had Contreras. They're fantastic. But, you know, Milwaukee is projected to be second. And they've got to make a decision on their pitching. You would think they're going to trade either Woodruff or Burns at some point. Their offense is still poor. So there is that spot for the Cubs maybe to finish in second place. I think they're going to have a good year. And as far as the Southsiders, their win total keeps dropping. The respected bettors are taking the under on the White Sox. So it's down to 82.5. I'm curious how these rules are going to impact the division, especially with Cleveland, a high contact team. They don't strike out much. They're so young. They're always developing pitching. So that's interesting. White Sox 35-1 for the World Series. And Dylan Cease, he's up there with the elite guys. He's the third favorite for the AL Cy Young at 9-1, only behind DeGrom and Cole. And he's the fourth favorite at 10-1 for the MLB strikeout leader.
I love just hearing numbers, because that means we are actually close to opening day. What do you like in terms of individually for the Cubs? Is there anything that stands out to you and says, hey, you might want to jump on this?
Not in particular. So it's funny. They don't have that star power where they're going to have someone near the top of the board as far as home run leader. And we know over the past number of years, it's been tougher and tougher to hit homers at Wrigley, been more of a pitcher's park. Like Dansby Swanson, if you look at some of the projections, they figure, okay, he could be a top 10 player in the National League, but is he going to win the MVP? Probably not. And that's why he's 100-1. As far as individual performances for the Cubs, I don't see it. I just can view it as a collective, them really coming through. And with the Sox, you know, the Aloy one is the homers is posted everywhere. I just can't do overs. David, we've talked about that with him and the injury history. They put him at 27.5 homers on the season.
This segment with Joe Ostrowski brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Please bet responsibly. All right, Joe, the Final Four. It's unlike last year. These are teams that haven't been here. Three of the four haven't been here before. Yeah. You don't know how they're going to respond on this stage. How do we look at and view this Final Four?
Yeah, from the betting perspective, a number of things haven't happened before. This is the first time we don't have a 1, a 2, or a 3. Now, I think the committee did a poor job. They underseeded a few of these teams, including UConn. It's also the first time when entering the tournament that we've got three teams in the Final Four that were all long shots. All of them 50-1 or higher. Florida Atlantic was 200-1 to win the title before the tournament started. So UConn is the heavy favorite to win it all. They're -125. You can do a bet UConn or the field, any of the other three teams involved here. But San Diego State is favored by 1.5 or 2 against Florida Atlantic. We know how they like to play. Now, if they were to win it all, they would be an outlier because of their offense. They're 75th in efficiency in the country. Now, a lot of that stuff, the outlier stuff, I would forget about this year. Just everything is up for grabs. UConn, they're a big favorite. 5.5 points against Miami. The Huskies are covering in the tournament by an average of 18 points per game, just pummeling teams. And Miami's defense, not viewed as a top 100 team when it comes to efficiency, but as far as this weekend, I do like Florida Atlantic to cover. I think they're going to win that game against San Diego State. And those San Diego State games, the unders keep on hitting. The total is only 131.5 due to their style of play. UConn was my pick, so I'm rolling with them. I think they're going to win big again coming up on Saturday.
When you look at the NFL situation is what we'll call it right now, the offseason.
Yeah.
I love listening to Lamar Jackson because he hasn't said much of anything except for if you read his social media posts. Do we have a feeling on where he might end up in terms of what makes sense if you're trying to maybe put a couple of dollars down?
It's hard, Marshall, because publicly at least, it seems like nobody wants Lamar Jackson.
Right.
A recent MVP, a guy in his prime. Nobody seems to be interested. Now, a lot of games are played, too, but they do have odds on that. Lamar Jackson's next team, if he leaves the Ravens, the favorite is down the road. It's the Indianapolis Colts at +250. The second favorite, Atlanta, +300. Patriots have been out there due to some rumors. They're the third favorite, Washington fourth. This is what I find interesting because it could bring him to the NFC North. Now tied for the fifth favorite. Two teams in the division here, Detroit and Minnesota. Now, Detroit is fascinating because I think most of us believe, man, what they're building there, it seems like they're just a quarterback away. They're set in the trenches. They're 9-1 to get Lamar.
And, Joe, they have two first-round draft picks. They could give it up easily.
They have the assets.
Make
they
the move.
Yes. And Campbell's been on the record. He's like, hey, we know Jared's not going to be here forever at golf. So you make that move. All of a sudden, they're a heavy favorite. They're a favorite already to win the North. How about this one? This changed a lot from yesterday. Minnesota Vikings are clearing a lot of cap space. Yesterday at this time, they were 20-1. Right now, they're 9-1 to get Lamar Jackson. So those could happen. And then that would flip everything in this division and the conference.
Crazy. All right, Joe, real quick, your audience weighs in on the text line. Did you say the Sox over or under in terms of victory? What are you leaning at?
Oh, I'm really torn on the White Sox. I do like the over on the Cubs. The number's been going down on the Sox, so that concerns me about going under. I think Cleveland's going to win the division. I think if you want to take a shot at them to win the World Series, that sort of upside is there. I flipping a coin, I'd go under on the Sox.
Joe Ostrowski with the head over the heart.
It's tough.
It's tough,
but it's honest. White Sox.
Thanks, yeah. Joe. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Joe Ostrowski, BetQL Daily co-host, talking all things sports. Really interesting. Cubs and White Sox over or under. The Cubs as well. Marshall, we could make the argument that the Cubs are going to be below 500 and people could defend it. You could make the same argument for the White Sox and people might be a little bit less, more skeptical, but they could understand it. I don't know which way you think the season is going to go, but I think we should talk about that next because opening day, right around the corner. What do you think out there? 312-644-6767. What are your expectations as opening day arrives on Thursday? Marshall Harris is in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.